This is episode 7 of the Sugar Mamas podcast. Today, I'm talking with my friend Gina. Gina's daughter, DJ, was recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes a few months ago. But we're not just talking about diabetes today. We're talking about a very important topic that affects a lot of people in general, but especially type 1 diabetics, and that is anxiety. Both Gina and her daughter have dealt with anxiety for the vast majority of their life. She is going to share with us how they've dealt with anxiety, the resources they've used, and the products that Gina has created to help children suffering with anxiety. Gina is the author of an adorable children's picture book called Katie, Not Afraidy. It's beautifully written and illustrated and was inspired by DJ's own story of anxiety and the ways that she's learned to cope. This conversation is going to be so beneficial to any parent who may be feeling anxious themselves or any parent who is helping walk their child through times of worry, anxiety, or maybe even panic. So sit tight and stay tuned for this sweet, calming, and encouraging chat between me and Gina. You're listening to the Sugar Mamas podcast, a show designed for moms of type 1 diabetics. Here you'll find a community of like-minded women who are striving daily to keep their kids safe, happy, and healthy while navigating the ever-changing world of type 1. I'm your host and fellow T1D mom, Katie Roseboro. Welcome and enjoy the show. Before we get started, I need you to know that nothing you hear on the Sugar Mamas podcast should be considered medical advice. Please be safe, be smart, and always consult your physician before making changes to the way you manage type 1 diabetes. Thanks. Hi, Gina.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. We've thrown in the towel for school today, so just smooth sailing right into the weekend.
Yep, all done. No more virtual. Thanks. Nope. Well, before we get started, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Gina. I'm formerly from the Bay Area of California, but we've been living in gloomy Portland, Oregon for the past 5 years. But we actually love it here. I know it gets a bad rap for the weather, but we really enjoy it. So yeah, I'm married and mama to 2 girls, 8.5 and 11. Mm-hmm. And let's see what else.
Well, what is your connection with type 1 diabetes?
Yes, my connection with type 1 diabetes is brand new. Our 11-year-old daughter, DJ, was just diagnosed 7 weeks ago. So prior to that, I had no connection, no understanding, wasn't even on my radar in my vocabulary or anything. So,
same here. I mean, I knew a little bit about it, but definitely wasn't on my radar. That's for sure. So yeah. You guys are very newly diagnosed. Would you mind sharing her diagnosis story with us?
Yeah, not at all. So DJ, I know one of the things we're going to talk about today is also my connection to anxiety. Yeah. As somebody who has anxiety, and DJ, our daughter, also has generalized anxiety disorder. And she's had it as far back as I can remember, but it had been changing. Something had been changing, I should say. She was having these kind of weird symptoms. I think at night was more noticeable because it was quiet and she was by herself, and just lots of racing heart and feeling like her mind was blank. And she kept saying, like, I feel like my head is buzzing, like I can't hold a thought. And so I had taken it up with her care team, her therapist and her pediatrician, and just saying, like, oh, I feel like her anxiety is getting worse. Anyway, we ended up deciding that she should try some anxiety medication because it was really interfering with her life. Mm-hmm. And instead of her pediatrician just writing that prescription for us, she said, you know, I also want to run some blood work and just check in. Let's check her thyroid. Let's check vitamin D levels. And so we did that. And the very next day, I got the phone call that we would have never expected, because you know, so many people, I think their introduction to type 1 is through diabetic ketoacidosis and this hugely traumatic experience. And I'm just so grateful that that was not our experience, but it still knocked us off our feet for sure. Totally unexpected.
And did they tell you to go to the hospital right then and there?
Yeah. She called, the doctor called and said, I hate to say this over the phone. I'm like, And I knew something was wrong. You know, no, the doctor never calls 24 hours after lab work. And so, yeah, she just said, I hate to tell you this over the phone, but DJ's blood glucose levels are really, really high. And I still could not wrap my brain around what that meant because diabetes was not on my radar. So I'm like, yes. And I remember just being in shock and searching and saying to her, so what does that mean? Does that mean she has cancer? And she was like, no, that doesn't mean that. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at is diabetes. And so what you need to do is head to the emergency room right now and pack a bag. You'll be there for a few days. And yeah, she said the emergency room knows you're coming. So head straight there.
So how have you been coping with, I mean, not only with the diabetes diagnosis, but I mean, just the whole past year with the pandemic and virtual school. And, you know, I know that I've never been diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder, but I can tell you that I definitely had some increased levels of anxiety during the pandemic, even before my daughter got diagnosed. And then you throw that diagnosis on top of it. And it was a lot, to say the very least. So how are you coping? How is she coping?
You know, I feel like we're collectively in this state of hard, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, it's hard. And it's hard for so many different reasons. It's hard to, as a mom, be responsible for all the things at all the times. Mm-hmm. You know, in this case, the schooling and the emotional support and being PE director and just their overall wellness, being tasked with being solely responsible for driving that is just recipe for burnout. So I think I just feel perpetually burned out. It's a lot of togetherness. And my husband for his job used to travel at least once a month. And so we all sort of had our space and, you know, it's just trying in so many different ways. And the unpopular response to that is as an introvert, the isolation has not been as difficult for me as I know it has been to so many other people that I love, my younger daughter included. So the adjustment, I think, really has just been when you're contained to your home, the amount of different hats and positions that you have to add on to what you were already doing as a mama bear. It's just overwhelming. And there's just not much time for myself in all of that, which I think that we can probably all relate to.
Oh gosh. Yes, I know. Yeah, we can definitely haven't been a whole lot of breaks over the past 12 months from everything, life in general. But you seem so calm.
I don't know about that. I think there's just been, we've been thrown so many curveballs within the pandemic. So my husband had an unexpected spinal surgery in October. And then as he was recovering from that, he had an unexpected emergency surgery for a massive kidney stone. And then in December, DJ had her diagnosis. So we're a little bit in medical trauma overload. Yet through all of that, I have learned that I truly have no control. And I have to just pull myself back to the present as much as I can. So maybe the calmness that you're sensing is just that hard work of trying to pull it in.
Oh yeah. That was a lesson I've definitely learned this season as well. We really have no controls. I think we can all get kind of lost in a state of trying to control, like trying to fix and control and manipulate. Mm-hmm. So we have that sense of just control, really, just knowing what to expect. And sometimes I think the more we try to do that, especially like in times like these, the more frustrating it is because you're just kind of constantly hit in the face with, no, you don't, you actually don't have control.
Yeah, it's true. And one of the things I loved that you really touched on in your podcast about goal setting was, but we do have the choice, right? We do have the choice of how we respond to that lack of control. And I think that sometimes we forget that choice is available to us. And some days it's easier to access than other days.
Yeah.
But if we try to keep it in the back of our mind that like, okay, I have a choice of how I can respond to having no control, it can make things much lighter.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as moms too, at least I would have to imagine you feel the same, like you just have to hold it together for your kids. I mean, it's okay for them to see you cry and be upset because that's normal and you want them to see that. But ultimately, you know, we gotta maintain some level of calm so they can also not panic.
Yeah. And they're watching.
I know, always.
Yeah.
So tell us, you mentioned a little bit of DJ, your daughter's history with generalized anxiety, but you yourself have a history with generalized anxiety as well. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the first time that it hit me in the face and I couldn't pretend that it wasn't there was I was in my early 20s. I was at a restaurant with my family and I had my first panic attack and it was terrifying. I truly did think that I was dying. The physical sensations were so terrifying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt like my hearing was getting muffled. I was starting to get tunnel vision. My heart was racing. My palms were sweaty. I felt like I couldn't breathe. And I just remember rising from the table and just trying to make my way out of the restaurant, out of the front door. And I just started pacing and all this nervous energy I didn't know what to do with. And I just started pacing. And of course, felt like an eternity, but my mom quickly came out and I just was begging her, drive me to the emergency room. And we ended up going. And I remember the ER doctor saying, oh, this was just a panic attack. And I held on to that word just for so many years because it just minimized what my experience had been. And I think it temporarily conditioned me to think that it's not a big deal. It's just not a big deal. But then it just started interrupting my life. I developed a phobia of restaurants from that point on. It took me years to be able to go into a restaurant without having intense anxiety on the way there. Plenty of restaurant experiences where I would get up and have to go into the bathroom and just sit in a stall and try to like breathe through it. And then that, I think, phobia started keeping me home. I was in my early 20s. You shouldn't be home in your early 20s. But I stayed home a lot and then finally thought, I should probably talk to somebody about this. And so went to my very first therapist. And that's where I finally learned that it wasn't just a thing, that it was a disorder. And in my case, and everybody is totally different, in my case, medication is really what helped restore some of those normal, healthy thought patterns. Mm-hmm. And so I've been living with it, you know, for over 20 years now and really have learned how to manage it quite well.
Wow. So would you mind explaining, and part of my ignorance, but with anxiety and panic attack, you know, is there always a trigger or sometimes does it just start?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And sort of what differentiates panic and anxiety. So panic attack, the reason why it's so terrifying is that it isn't correlated to a trigger. It just happens and it just happens out of nowhere. And it's incredibly disruptive for that reason. Mm-hmm. Whereas anxiety, usually know or you can get to the source of the fear or the worry. And, you know, it's usually comes about in anticipation of something, or if you are put in a situation that, you know, is a trigger for you. So I think anxiety is a little bit easier to manage because you can tweak and control your environment a little bit to sort of lessen that anxiety, or you can learn tools to cope with it. But panic is just without warning.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how would you differentiate, or how would you explain to people the difference between, you know, kind of your everyday worries and then anxiety? Because I feel like most of us worry about something, right? Yep. But what's the difference between the two?
Yeah.
And so when should people know, like, I should probably go talk to somebody about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The way that I explain it to my kids and other kids that I work with is that that worries are good. There can be really huge benefits to having the good kind of worry, right? And I, you know, usually talk them through looking down at the deep end of a pool and worrying that you might not be a strong enough swimmer. You might not be able to hold your breath long enough. Like, those are all good types of worries that keep us safe, keep us healthy, keep us thinking through the process and weighing out pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Those are beneficial worries. When the worry turns into an excessive fear, when that worry interrupts your life before you even take the next step, when that worry talks you into believing, you know, that there's imminent threat or imminent danger, mm-hmm. that's when it's grown into anxiety. That's when it's gone from a healthy, beneficial worry into potentially looking at some anxiety disorders.
Okay. So you started to notice that in your daughter as well, you said, at a very early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At a very early age, I can remember as a baby, she startled so easily. And, you know, I'm looking back, and you don't want to like nitpick. I mean, there are babies who are more sensitive, and she's definitely a highly sensitive individual. But, you know, you start having little clues that like, I think that maybe she was just brought in. This is just part of who she is, right? Is just a highly anxious person. But it was not until she got into preschool that I was like, oh, and now this is interrupting her life, because she had developed this phobia at preschool of the toilets, of all things. But it took us weeks to understand that that was the root of her fear. But it would be time to leave for school, and she would run, she'd dart under her bed, she'd hold on to the leg of her bed, not wanting to go to preschool. And of course, you know, as a parent, we're like, oh my gosh, what is happening at that school? It's really unsettling. But we had so many really good friendships at that school. And, you know, the thought crosses your mind, but it was like, okay, no, so there's something else or something else. And so in preschool, I realized like, okay, this is going to be a thing that she's going to have to live with, because I can see how easily it wants to stop her from doing these things that other kids her age should be enjoying and excited about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's how you kind of knew like, oh, like you said, now this is disrupting her life.
Yes.
Affecting her ability to function and do quote unquote normal preschool aged things.
Yeah. Okay. And just not wanting to, she was in a co-op preschool at the time, and she would just, I mean, hold onto my leg. And of course, separation anxiety is normal, but this was like to the extreme kind of mm-hmm. things, you know, where other people would start noticing and, you know, have you read this book? Have you read this book? Yes, yeah. Thank you. I know.
Well, I wanted to ask you also, you mentioned earlier, you know, talking with other people, I know right now you're a full-time mom.
Yes.
What's your vocation? Do you help people with anxiety, or is that part of your job?
Well, sort of. Mm-hmm. So what I was most recently doing, I was a paraeducator at an elementary school, and I was working primarily one-on-one with some children who had special needs, and I loved it and feel really sad without having that job in my life. But due to COVID, budgets were cut. I couldn't do that. Before that, I had been a preschool teacher and a preschool teacher's assistant. And before that, in my way before kids' life, I was in the corporate world. But it has been my passion, you know, since DJ was a little baby, to come alongside parents of other anxious children and anxious children and just create community. So one of the things I've done since losing my job mm-hmm. is I've put together some virtual camps for kids where they come and they learn anxiety management skills. And then we also make hands-on calming tools that they can use as part of their anxiety toolkit. Mm-hmm. I've created some caretakers courses for parents, caretakers of anxious children to just come and find community. And we've been working on a product that I'm hoping anxious children can use once they're back in classrooms. So that's my passion. It's not necessarily my job yet.
Right.
It's not necessarily what I've been trained for, but it is the direction I feel called in.
Well, and one of the other amazing tools and resources that you created for children and parents of anxious children is a book. You wrote a book.
Yes, we did.
That was one of the many reasons I wanted to have you on today, was to talk about not only anxiety in children, which I know is something a lot of type 1 diabetics suffer with. I've seen some of that in my own daughter. I mean, she's always been a little bit of a sensitive child too. Mm-hmm. I would definitely classify her as an introvert. Takes her years to warm up to people. She mm-hmm. can be very shy. She's changed a lot, actually, in the past 6 months, which I talk about in the first episode. But anyway, I've seen, especially when she's going low, when she's mm-hmm. in, you know, like the double arrows down type of low, which mm-hmm. obviously we try to avoid at all costs, but she gets, I mean, I would say panicking, like,
yeah.
you know, very, very difficult to calm her down. So I feel like she's many kids suffer, type 1 diabetics specifically, with anxiety in some form or another. So I'm sure some are way more serious than others. But I wanted to have you on to talk about childhood anxiety, but also your book, because I think it's awesome. I've read
Thank you.
I want to tell everybody about it.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I'm glad you read it. So it's called Katie, Not Afraidy, which I know is not grammatically correct, but our main character in the story is named Katie, Not Afraidy. Mm-hmm. And the concept started years and years ago, probably 4.5 years ago. It was pretty soon after our move to Oregon. And DJ, even though in a lot of ways since our move to Oregon, she has just come out of her shell. There's something about being in Oregon. I think she feels the slower paced life. As compared to the life we were living in California, she just feels very settled here. Mm-hmm. But about 4.5 years ago, it was, you know, our whole world was brand new here. And she was just starting. And that's the thing with anxiety, you know, it comes in waves and rolls, and different situations can cause different, you know, feelings to come up. Obviously, you know, with anybody, that's true. I think anxious people maybe tend to ruminate on those changes a little bit more. So she had just been having a lot of feels, and I encouraged her to start writing them down. And I just was blown away by her ability to articulate her experiences and to be able to say, you know, when I feel like this, it feels like this. Or when I think about this, I feel like this. This is really insightful.
Yeah. She's only like, what, 6 or 7 at the time?
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, then I thought, oh gosh, well, how fun would it be if you start drawing, draw some pictures to go with these words. And then we had a book. I wish I had had it close by. Then we had a book. And
I
wouldn't be able to show it anyway.
I know. I was going to say, I do have it nearby, but nobody can see it.
Exactly. So our first iteration was just DJ's stories and DJ's illustrations. And then we thought, gosh, why couldn't we turn this into a book that we could share with other people? And so there have been a few different iterations, but we decided we would just go for it. And we hired an illustrator and had an editor, and we just brought the story to life. And
okay with that? I'm sorry.
She was. And it's been really, really empowering for her. You know, she's brought the book to her school pre-COVID, and she's read it in classrooms, and the librarian has a copy in their, you know, catalog. You know, she has a description of it, and it's on the library bookshelf at her school. And back when I was teaching preschool, she guest star in the preschool and read to the kids at circle time, read her book. And so I think it's really empowered her to own her anxiety. And I think it's really empowered her to see that you don't have to be a grown up to sort of have these lofty goals and make stuff happen. You know, she's like, I wrote a book.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
The other part of it too that's been really cool is that it's helped her friends understand her more. Mm-hmm. And it's opened the door for them to ask questions about anxiety. And she now has become sort of this go-to, even at 11 years old. You know, I think they're in fifth grade and emotions are starting to change and get complicated. And she's just sort of been this go-to person because I think her friends have sensed her openness because of this book. So that's a long-winded answer to yes, she has really enjoyed having the world see her experience and stories.
Yeah. And I know you talked about that in the book a little bit. I mean, it's a children's picture book. So it's definitely written for children, and it explains things in a way that children could understand easily, which I love. But one of the things in the book is about not trying to hide your anxiety, talking to people about it, so it can be normalized, you know, because there's a lot of shame in trying to hide something like that.
Yep.
Big thing to try and hide from other people. So I think that's great. And I think it's great that her friends know that they can come to her and talk to her about it and not pretend like, you know, nothing's wrong.
Exactly. Well, and I think the same for our T1D warriors too, right? It's like now all of a sudden they've become this beacon of information, you know, and if they are a child who feels comfortable enough sharing, now all of a sudden their friends have an understanding of this disease that I was 43 before I understood, you know? So I think it's just neat to see our kiddos own their things.
Yes. definitely. I also love about the book, it's interactive. You kind of pause on certain pages and ask people, parents and kids to flip to the back to, you know, to do little activities to kind of help them understand their thoughts and their worries and their anxieties, and then kind of walk them through, here are some things you can do to help you when you're feeling anxious.
Yes.
I love that it's not just a book, it's an activity as well.
Thank you. That was important to me to include, because I think one of the game changing resources for us, and of course I'm blanking on the name of it right now. I can get that to you, but it is a workbook. We bought it off of Amazon, but it was a workbook, and it really became sort of this cornerstone in our anxiety world of understanding it, understanding what DJ's triggers were, understanding how to cope and deal. And because that had made such an impact in our journey, I really wanted to include some type of interactive pages within our book as well. I think, and also I think that when you stop and pause, it does keep you kind of in that present moment that we were talking about at the beginning of this call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually read it to Sarah yesterday after I had read it once, and we did the little breathing exercise that was in there. And you're just gonna have to buy the book if you would like to help the breathing exercise. But she was into it.
That's awesome.
You know, she liked it. It was calming me too. I mean, I'm gonna use that one.
Good. There you go.
So do you have plans to write any other books, or you might not want to spoil it, but do you have what's coming up?
My long-term goal, someday I want to figure out how to write a memoir, but DJ already has formulated the title of a type 1 diabetes book. So I'm not pushing it. She will, you know, we'll move that ship forward if that's something that she's really interested in. But she definitely was like, well, now we're going to have to write a book about type 1 diabetes. Let's go for it. So she's got her character. She's got the title of the book, and we'll just see what happens from here.
Well, not very exciting. I'll be following up with you on that. I love it.
Thank you.
I love that she's just like, yeah, like you said, like, who cares if you're 11 years old? I can write a book. Move out of my way.
Exactly. Exactly. It's kind of the beauty of self-publishing though, right?
Yeah. Well, that's true. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly.
I was hoping you could maybe offer the moms that are listening some advice, some tips on maybe phrases that they could use when their child is maybe having a panicky moment or an anxious moment, or just a few tools, you know, just words. Because I think a lot of us are, I mean, I know that I definitely have fallen into the trap of, you got to calm down. Just calm down. Just because, I don't know, it's just kind of like, we're panicking too, even though we're trying not to show that. But maybe some better phrases other than just, you need to calm down.
Yeah. So my favorite phrase, and I think that it's even more appropriate now with this new diagnosis, is just, you are safe. Mm-hmm. You are safe. Because what anxiety is telling you is that you are not, that something is wrong, that you are not okay. You know, and that can be, I mean, and it convinces you of that truth. And so my go-to is always, you are safe. I am here. You are safe. And if that is all you can remember to say in those moments, that is enough, because you are demonstrating that you are in it with them. You are not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that you are not diminishing or invalidating the I'm not okay feelings that they're having in that moment. Mm-hmm. What you are saying is, it doesn't matter what you're feeling, I am here with you and you are safe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if that's all you say over and over and over again until they've been able to calm down a little bit, I think that that's enough. You know, you're reassuring, you're validating, you know, like you were saying, that just calm down, you know, the just calm down, or the you're okay, even, you know. And I think that there's just such a fine line between you are safe and you're okay, that just tweaking that a little bit offers that validation. Because saying you're okay when everything in their body and brain is saying I am not okay, I think the initial response to that is, you're not seeing me, you're not understanding me, you're not hearing me, because I'm telling you I'm not okay. And then the other thing that has really worked, and in all of different certifications I've gone through and classes I've taken, is just remaining curious. And that if you can't, you know, I think that so often, especially as mamas, we feel wholly responsible responsible for fixing the situation or wholly responsible for bringing some type of reassurance or magical, you know, oh, I feel so much better now that you said that, Mom. Mm-hmm.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah. But sometimes not having the answer is way more beneficial, and asking questions, I think, can bring a lot of comfort to the child, because you're just being really curious about, or you're giving them a safe place to be able to talk about how they're feeling, you know, by saying, I hear that you're feeling, you know, repeat whatever it is that you're seeing or they're telling you, like, gosh, I can see that your body is really shaky right now. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. Where are you feeling that in your body? Asking them questions. Where are you feeling that? What does that feel like? What is your brain telling you? What thoughts are you having right now? Asking more than telling, I think, is such a great coaching experience for them, because by doing that, you're teaching them to really look inward and pay attention to what sensations are coming up, because then sometimes you can get ahead of it the next time, right? You can say, gosh, I can see that you're starting to feel a little bit shaky. Let's start our breathing work now, right? Instead of watching it go full-fledged mm-hmm. panic or anxiety attack.
No, I think that's good. I think, you know, something I've tried to do a little bit with Sarah, and hopefully this is along the same lines as what you're talking about, is, you know, showing her being vulnerable with her, showing her my weakness mm-hmm. and lack of knowledge too, because she's not the only one that doesn't know what to do, you know, I'm not going to run around like the house is on fire, but, you know, for instance, maybe a silly example, but, you know, we're going to eat pizza. I have no idea how many carbohydrates are in this piece of pizza. Yeah. Everybody tells you that pizza is evil. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying those things to Sarah, but just, you know, she's like, well, how much insulin, Mommy? And I'm like, sweetie, I really don't know. I've never done this before, but this is my best guess. And if it's too much, then we have a juice box right here. And if it's not enough, then we can fix that later. But either way, you know, we're going to figure it out together. I'm going to be here with you. I think that has helped Sarah, because you're their mom. And even though, you know, a lot of days I don't feel qualified to be an adult even, but to be a mom. And, you know, I think our kids always expect us to know what to do and to have the right answer. So I think just showing her that I don't always know and I don't always have the right answer has helped her just realize, okay, well, I'm not alone. Mommy's on the journey with me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the other really important thing about the way that you respond is you're also laying out a plan for her, mm-hmm. which is demonstrating you're safe, right? So I think with a lot of anxious kiddos and adults, they need to know the plan. Mm-hmm. They need to know, if my fear happens, mm-hmm. if this comes true, how are you going to help me? And so I love that you're saying, you know, I don't really know. I'm going to take my best guess. If this happens, then here's the plan. And if this happens, then here's the plan. Mm-hmm. And what that tells them is, it's okay not to know. There's going to be a solution and I'm going to be safe. Mm-hmm. And so I love that. I love that you're doing that and doing it. Just, you're giving so many gifts in that one response.
Okay, good. Whew. Yeah. So if a parent thinks that their child is suffering from anxiety, what should be step one?
Yeah, I think step one. Yeah, in my opinion, mm-hmm. I am not a doctor or a professional, but I think step one, like I was saying, is to be curious is really helpful, because even when you call a pediatrician, which would probably be step number two, mm-hmm. to be able to explain what you're noticing, you know, and I think that right now we are all spending so much time with our kids that I know there are so many different things that can be happening with them that look like other things, right? So depression could look like ADHD, ADHD could look like depression, anxiety could look like depression, depression could look like, you know, and so I think getting curious about, or maybe starting to journal mm-hmm. when you're seeing these behaviors, what is the precursor, what, you know, like what's happening right before, what's going to be happening next, and start to notice if there are patterns. If it's every time we're going to leave the house, they start getting really anxious about it. Well, you know, maybe that's because now we're in COVID and they're worried about germs and they're overhearing the news and they're, you know, mm-hmm. so I think just getting curious, being really mindful of any sort of patterns, asking them, I think with older kids too, it's okay to ask, have you ever thought of hurting yourself? Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an uncomfortable question for so many of us. And I think a lot of us are afraid that if we ask that, we're going to put the idea in our kid's head. And that's just not the case. Any suicide prevention training I've ever been to, that's one of the first things they say. You have to get comfortable with asking. And so I think with older kids, it's perfectly appropriate to ask that. That helps you gauge really where they're at. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're simultaneously gathering your resources. You're talking to your pediatrician. You're saying, these are some of the things that I'm seeing. These are some of the things that they're saying to me. And in DJ's case, thank God for that, because the pediatrician was able to say, there might be something else here than just anxiety. And that's mm-hmm. how we found the type one. But so not only are they going to rule out, your pediatrician is going to help rule out any other medical issues, but mm-hmm. they're likely going to be the person who gives you resources to therapists, to mm-hmm. counselors. I think that's mm-hmm. a really daunting task for a lot of parents mm-hmm. to say, gosh, I think that we need some professional support. I don't even know where to start. Pediatrician is just a great place to start.
Yeah. And usually, even your, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say, and probably there's got to be, I would imagine, some counselors, child psychologists out there that have experience with type 1 diabetes specifically too. Not that they have to be by any means, but mm-hmm. your endocrinologist might be able to have resources to offer you as well, yeah, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Or clinical educator,
mm-hmm.
which by
and
the
also
way.
School counselors mm-hmm. are great resources too. There's usually social workers who float around districts and things like that. So,
okay. Yeah. I just wanted to say too, because you just mentioned when you went in for the anxiety and the doctor was ruling things out and that's how you found the type one, that yeah. yes, it could be anxiety. But I think it's important too, like you said, step two, always check with the doctor, because just an experience in my own life after I had Sarah, I have my first two, my oldest and Sarah are only 16 months apart.
Wow.
So I had her, and like 6 months later, I had already been back at work for about 3 months and just feeling incredibly anxious, like heart palpitations,
yeah.
fearful of going to work, like just kind of coming up with scenarios in my head that might happen and then yeah. just panicking over them. I was having that. I was like sweating all the time. I mean, so it came to the point, like for months, I was like, oh, I just had a baby and my two kids are only 16 months apart. It's just that, like, I'm just overwhelmed and overtired. It's just that. Well, finally I went to the doctor because I thought, I'm having panic attacks. This might be yeah. anxiety. And they did lab work and it ended up being thyroid. My thyroid yeah. had stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
So they diagnosed me with Hashimoto's thyroiditis,
yeah.
an autoimmune disease, you know? And so I got on medication for that. And that mm-hmm. actually within weeks, I felt completely better, back to yeah. what I would say was my normal self.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there definitely is things, medical conditions that can present as anxiety. So that, you know, don't discount that thought that, oh, there might be two things going on. It might be,
yes,
you know, anxiety and this, or
yep.
It's causing the anxiety. Not always. I know, not always, but.
No, but it's true. And I think, you know, they can, and in fact, what you just said is probably going to be part two of our diabetes journey, because mm-hmm. DJ did test positive for the antibodies mm-hmm. related to thyroid mm-hmm. disease. So right now, her thyroid function appears to be normal, mm-hmm. but at some point, that's likely to change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often wonder if that is sort of an underlying part, you know, even though it appears to be functioning normal right now, are we on the brink? And so I definitely would second everything that you just said. And I have to say, I feel, you know, I try to really live in as much gratitude as possible. Some days it's really freaking hard.
Yeah.
But I feel like anxiety has trained me and DJ mm-hmm. our whole lives for being in this moment with diabetes, because anxiety has taught us to be so attuned to our bodies and so hyper-focused on all of the feelings that when we knew something was off with her, we gave ourselves permission to like, let's pursue. Let's see what's going on.
I like to ask people at the end of the podcast.
Yes.
What are you really struggling with right now? You know, related to type 1 diabetes. Yep. And what do you feel like you're really rocking right now?
Oh, I might have to take a pass on that second part. Okay.
Your hair looks great. You're definitely rocking the hair right now.
Thank you. I am not wearing a bra because I knew we were going to be, you know, from here up.
Our voices. No need.
So what am I struggling with? I think what feels like the biggest struggle right now is the sibling relationship. And I don't know if this is something that has happened in your home or something that you've figured out, but you know, just the attention has shifted a bit in different ways, right? So there's just more focus on DJ right now by default, right? There's conversation at the dinner table almost every night about something related to, she'll say like, hey mom, can I have a popsicle after dinner? And how many carbs is that going to be? And it's like, just, I don't even want to talk about it at the table, you know? And I think that the younger one, she has said to me, like, are we always going to always talk about this? You know? And
yeah,
it's so heartbreaking. And as much as we, you know, try to, like, she gets a low treatment every time DJ gets a low treatment, and mm-hmm. she gets to eat Skittles when DJ gets to eat Skittles and things like that. There's so much need, right, in DJ's life right now. And at first with the diagnosis, just being in the hospital for 3 days, and then every day thereafter, talking to the endocrinologist, you know, talking to the educators, and the amount of time spending on the phone mm-hmm. that was focused on DJ, but even taking away from the time I was homeschooling with Zoe. And mm-hmm. so it's just been hard. And I haven't figured out the best way to have diabetes in our life without it affecting little sister in such a big way. Mm. And I don't even know if that's a realistic expectation that someday it'll all even out and it won't be the only thing we talk about.
I know. No, I mean, we definitely talk about it here too. And I mean, maybe that would actually be a good topic for another podcast episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, siblings, because they do get the short end of the stick for at least in the beginning, I think.
Yes.
I mean, who knows? We're both very early on in this journey, but
yeah.
You know, there's just so much to figure out and there's so much to focus on. And you're calling doctors and you're calling insurance companies and
yes,
you're dealing with lows. Like, just like you said, I really don't think there's a way to mm-hmm. avoid it, at least in the yeah. beginning. I'm hopeful that we'll all settle in and it won't consume as much of our daily lives. I hear that a year is a big turning point. I feel like that's when a lot of people, I mean, I don't know, I'm not there yet, but that's when a lot of people kind of start pumping or just feel more comfortable, whatever right. you're doing, whether it's MDI still, just mm-hmm. feel more comfortable. I know that I've had to, Sarah has two brothers, and especially the littlest one seems to need me more. He's just, yeah. not only because he's the littlest, but just because he's, that's just how he is. You know what I yeah. mean? Like, he would yeah. just like to hug me and just stay attached yes. to me forever. But I used to be, you know, the type of mom where it's like, it's 8 o'clock. It is bedtime. Get in bed. We are done.
Yes.
If you yep. didn't get water, I'm sorry. You know what
yes.
I mean? Like,
yes.
kind of like a drill sergeant at bedtime.
Yes.
But I have found over the past 6 months that that's one way I can sneak in a little extra time for the boys. Mm-hmm. They actually mm-hmm. share a room. So when I go to tuck them in, I'm not like, okay, good night. I sit and I talk with them more and we say our bedtime prayers and yeah. you know, I might read them a story and just talk about their day. Even if it's just an extra 15 minutes,
yes.
it's just a way to make them feel like, oh, mommy's paying attention to us.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. And I think that 15 minutes, we've been told by our kids' therapist that 15 minutes really is a golden amount of time, that if you can just do 15 minutes of one-on-one time mm-hmm. every day or strive for 3 days a week, that just fills their love tanks, mm-hmm. you know? And so I try to remember that, but I'm not making it happen.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I don't think that I'm doing it perfectly every day. I'm just saying that's one thing that came to mind.
Yes.
Like bedtime. You used yep. to throw them in their rooms and close the door, but now I'm
right.
like, okay, look yeah. at that. How are you?
Yeah. No, it serves as a great reminder to me that it can be as simple as mm-hmm. joining them in their bedroom at night. Because I'm the same way. I'm like, mama is done. Good night.
Yes.
But maybe I start that process 15 minutes early so that it's not cutting into, you know, my time.
Right. Exactly.
But that's cool. A great reminder.
Well, what do you feel like you're really doing amazing at? What are you rocking right now?
I don't know that I am rocking anything, but I'd say one thing that has been maybe easier than I anticipated or that I was told to anticipate was just the amount of planning. I remember when DJ was first diagnosed, I reached out to my step cousin whose son has type 1. And I said, gosh, people keep saying this is really hard, or I'm reading on all these message boards, this is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a stupid question, but what do people mean? Like, what is the hardest part of it? Is it the fear? Is it the, like, what? Mm-hmm. And she just said, well, for me, it's just the lack of spontaneity. It's that you have to plan everything. And it's no more just jumping in the car and going to the park. You have to think about insulin and snacks and all of that. And I just remember thinking like, okay, I think I can do that. And so if there is a part that I feel more confident in than other parts, it's the planning part. And again, I think my anxiety has totally prepped me for this because I'm the type of, I've never gone on a road trip without thinking about, well, if our car breaks down on the side of the road and it's snowing and we're trapped in the car for 3 days, what will we need? Mm-hmm. And so planning is just a natural part of my thought process. And so that has been okay for me. And I'm like, I got this part. I have snacks for days. I have snacks in the glove compartment, snacks in the purse, snacks in the backpack. No problem. Mama's got it. I would say it's not rocking, but it wasn't a hard adjustment.
No, I think that's a huge thing because I have definitely, we have been out at a restaurant and I didn't have our insulin. Maybe I should have planned better. So I think that's not easy and good job. I think that's not an easy thing. So I think that's great that you feel like you're doing well with the planning. I know. I think we all need like a giant poster size checklist before we walk out the door. Do you have your kit? You know, whatever, snacks, right. Everything, water.
Yeah, I know. My husband was like, why is there another Amazon box? And I'm like, well, because I had to get mini ice packs to go in the travel pack because, and he's like, we're going 45 minutes away. Yes, but if we get a flat tire and we don't have enough insulin in the pen, we are going to need the backup. Therefore, ice packs from Amazon.
That's right.
Might be a little overkill, but makes me feel better.
You're reminding me that I ordered those mini juice boxes from Amazon. You know, like the little ones with the Sesame Street characters on them? And they never came. You reminded me that I need to get on there and figure out where those went. Amazon doesn't usually lose things, but...
No, they don't.
In like a month now that you said that.
And those are the perfect... How many grams of carbs are in those little ones?
I want to say it's like 13 or 14. Okay. But for whatever reason, those juice boxes do not cause her to like have a bad rebound high. I don't know what it is because there's other juice boxes that have the same amount of carbs.
Yeah.
But they like spike her way more than these little ones. So.
Okay. I'm going to have to add that to my list.
I think they're called Apple and Eve.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add that. DJ is not so much a juice person. So we have not, but this could be the answer.
Yeah. Well, like you said, if you're out and about and that's the only thing you've thrown in your purse.
Exactly.
That's what you're going to get some juice. Here you go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, please tell everybody where we can find the book, Katie Not Afraidy, and where we can find you.
Thank you so much. So Katie Not Afraidy is on Amazon and you can get it directly there. Or we've just today, we are launching our website that has been in the process for far too long. And it's katienotafraidy.com.
Okay.
And you can go to the little book tab and there'll be a button that will take you right to Amazon. And then I am on Instagram and Facebook as Gina, G-I-N-A, M Perkins, P-E-R-K-I-N-S. And I post a lot about our T1D journey and anxiety on my social media accounts.
Yeah, I will put both of those in the show notes too, the link to the book on Amazon and the link to you, awesome. If that's okay.
Thank you. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I really loved having you on today. Thank you so much for talking with me. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. You guys, seriously, the book is so cute. And the illustrations are just so precious and calming. Like, I just feel like the colors...
Yes. I have to give a shout out to our illustrator, Christina Yu, on social media. She is at Cheery Human Studios. And that's exactly, yes, right? And it is. She just has this whimsical quality about her artwork. And I do. I feel like she brought the book to life in a way that our words alone could have never done. So,
yeah, no, very whimsical and just very gentle and calming. Like, you know, even when you're just reading the book and you just, I don't know, you just kind of settle in and feel at peace. It's nice. It's really
nice. Thank you so much.
Go check it out.
That means a lot. Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. And thank you for being just a really strong voice of authenticity and positivity in this new world that we've entered into. I don't even know how I found you at first, but you are definitely somebody that I just feel connected to in the ways that you're managing. You're real and you're keeping it real and one foot in front of the other. And I appreciate that example. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. What kind words. Thank you. I might have to call you every week just to like,
hey, you know, let's do it.
Just have a little pep talk.
Yep. We can do it.
Thank you so much.
And I love the Dexcom art. That has That has turned those really stressful moments into really fun moments. And so thank you for putting that out there.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah. I like to turn Sarah's Dexcom graphs into different pictures depending on what I see in the line. I honestly had the thought the other day of, because we're getting on a pump in a couple of weeks. I'm like, oh no, like, what if the numbers are in such better control that, like, I don't have any Dexcom art to put out there? I'll just have to screw it up every now and then. Like, here, eat this cupcake. Let's see what happens. Just
Oh my gosh. No, I know. Isn't it so crazy? Like, when was Sarah diagnosed?
In August of 2020. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So just almost exactly 6 months ago. So five.
Does it blow your mind that all of a sudden you know what MDI is and Dexcom and CGM and the amount of things that we learn in such a short amount of time just blows my mind.
Yes. Yeah. It does blow my mind. And I find myself not meaning to, but somebody who's not the mom of a type 1 diabetic will just like ask me a question about it and I'll start explaining. And I could just tell by the look in their eyes that like maybe I've gone too far. Like they don't care about bolusing or basal insulin. Yes.
Yeah.
So I have to be like, never mind. Let's talk about how are you doing?
Right. I know.
Yeah. The terms that are floating around in my brain now are 10 times what was there 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
And that is it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Katie Not Afraidy, the book that Gina wrote. You can find it on Amazon, every mom's favorite place to shop, but let's be honest, pretty much everyone's favorite place to shop. I'll put a link to that on Amazon. I will also put a link to the Katie Not Afraidy website, which is katienotafraidy.com. And I will definitely also link to Gina's social media accounts. You can find her on Instagram. She has such a wonderful feed. She shares words of encouragement, posts funny stories. I always love to see her pop up as I'm scrolling. You're definitely going to want to check out what she's got going on. It's not just the book that she's created. She just launched another adorable product that you're just going to have to go find her to see what it is. But it's super cute and just a wonderful resource for any child that might be dealing with anxiety. I'm also going to put a link in the show notes to the workbooks that Gina mentioned that she found on Amazon that really helped her daughter DJ kind of walk through what she was feeling, maybe why she was feeling it, just to help her cope with and manage some of her worries. Gina sent me those links and let me pull up the names for you really quick so you can know what they are. One of them's called What to Do When You Worry Too Much. One of them's called What to Do When Your Brain Gets Stuck. I need that one. And one of them is called CBT Workbook for Kids. She said they both really enjoyed going through those workbooks and that they both learned a lot from them. So check them out. And as always, if you want to know where to find me, I'm on Instagram and we now have a Facebook page and there's a Sugar Mamas podcast Facebook group. I'll put all those links in the show notes as well. Come check it out. We're having a lot of fun on social media. Or should I say I'm having a lot of fun on social media. I can't speak for everybody else. Thank you so, so very much for listening. I hope you guys have a great week. Tune in next time and we will chat soon. Bye.